Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since the pond. And you're listening to the Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I speak to positive psychologist Summer Bradshaw, who has her own business called Zen Life. Summer, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, and thank you for coming on the show. Zen Life, I think that's a brilliant. I think Zen Life is a brilliant name, by the way. When I was reading the information, I saw Zen Life. I was like, that sounds really cool, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we all definitely need a bit of Zen in our lives, and especially the state of the world at the moment. And I think owning your own Zen in your life is kind of what it's all about, you know, for me. So, yeah.
100%, absolutely, 100%. Look, Summer, tell us a bit more about your background and how you got to where you are, and, you know, how did Zen Life come to life?
Well, gosh, how long have you got, Gavin?
45 to 50 minutes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've had a previous career. I've got 2 children, 2 boys, 2 lovely boys. And before I was doing what I'm doing now, I was actually working in broadcast television for about 10 years. And initially I actually went to drama school. So I was an actress for 6 years. I've traveled the world filming, doing all sorts of things with celebrities and crazy things, Las Vegas, Barbados, you know,
gosh,
you name it. I had a great time. It was amazing. And then, like many women, I guess, or many mums, I had my 2 boys. And it just kind of didn't work anymore for me. Things completely shifted. My priorities changed. My wants and my needs were different. I loved my job, and I'd spent kind of my entire life working towards my career. But it was one of those jobs where it was all encompassing. It was, looking back now, well, when I was in it, I kind of knew it, but looking back, especially now, it was incredibly bad for my well-being. There was very few boundaries. It was, you know, it was all or nothing. You were expected to work late in the office. You were filming until the filming was done, which was, you know, whenever, all night, sometimes weeks on end. I know we all regularly as crews, and when we were filming, used to get tonsillitis. We were really run down. And after I had the boys, I had a real massive journey with my identity, who I was, because my job had become me, I guess, or I had become my job. And it was a really crazy time for me, deciding what worked for me and who I was, really. So that was kind of the beginning of the shift out of television and performance and that kind of broadcast world that I'd known since I was about 18, really. I mean, it was something that I'd always wanted to do. But as my saying now is, in my business, every different stage of your life requires a different version of you. And I think in this country especially, we're quite bad at evolving as we go. And as far as education goes and career and things like that, you know, a lot of people have a lot of guilt around it with degrees, especially, you know, if you'd spent all that money on training and, you know, but quite often when what you do when you're 18, I mean, I'm 46 now, and I'm definitely, there's elements of me that are the same, but I mean, what I need and what I want is completely different. So it was like forcing a round peg into a square hole, I guess. And my children were the spotlights that put the focus on me to begin that change, although I didn't really know what that change was. And I guess actually for 10 years, pretty much after I'd had them, I was in a state of panic as to where I was going and what the meaning was for me in my life outside of my children, which has always been important to me. So, yeah. So, what happened then?
A lot. I think you've done brilliantly, honestly. And then, you know, raising a family as well. I mean, obviously, that in itself has a lot of challenges, you know, two boys, yeah. And the career change as well. Transitioning to anything, I think, is always another challenge. But you embrace, I mean, you're I think you're really enjoying it and you're embracing that. And, you know, like we said, we spoke before the actual interview show.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, how are you finding it?
I love it. It's an absolute passion of mine. I mean, I think I've actually had elements of love for positive psychology throughout my whole life, but not really known it. And I think the pinnacle of when I started to realize that I was using it, I didn't necessarily have a label for it then, but was around 2017. I've traveled around a lot. I've lived in lots of different places. My husband actually is a sailor, so he travels around the world. And my second son was actually born in Mallorca because we spent a lot of time there when one of the boats he was on was based there a lot. So I was to-ing and fro-ing. And in 2015, we moved sort of permanently back to England after traveling around a lot. And he was away. I had a toddler one of them was two and one of them was four and a half or something like that. He was away for pretty much 12 months sailing around the world on a one-off amazing life choice contract that he had to take and that I wanted him to take because his career had been building to that moment. So essentially I had to find new schools. I had to find a new house. I had to do a move from our place where we were staying in Mallorca at the time back to England.
Oh, that's a lot. On my own.
Whilst planning a wedding, I should throw in there at the end, which wasn't in the plan.
No.
Yes, I know. I wasn't supposed to be getting married whilst doing all of those things at the end of the year, but it just had worked out like that because he was going around the world and he said to me, look, you know, it's going to be a year. I mean, around the world sailing trip pretty much is about a year. I had no family there. I had a lot of lovely, wonderful friends, but, you know, they all had their babies. We were all, toddlers, and we were all a similar age. So we came back to England, and over the following couple of years, I started to have terrible, terrible anxiety attacks, which is no surprise now. I mean, if anybody had just, I mean, look at your reaction to what I just...
Yeah, no, you know what? I think you need positive psychology to get through all of that. I'll be honest with you, you know, it's a lot. That's a lot on your own.
It's a lot. And I wouldn't recommend anybody doing that. And over the years, I've definitely found it hard to ask for help, I would say, which is probably one of my most detrimental character.
You're very self-reliant. You're very self-reliant, proactive. A lot of it sounds like project management as well. You know,
it is project management. I mean, life is project management, isn't it, really?
That's a good one. But, I like that. Yeah,
it is.
That's a good one. I like that.
I actually had been to the doctors about my anxiety and they weren't brilliant. They didn't really give me anything helpful because I wasn't bad enough for clinical help, but I was struggling. I didn't really fit anywhere. So things have got so bad. I was waking up in the night with it. I thought, you know what? I'm going to do this on my own. What a surprise. I'm going to do this on my own. So I started reading loads of books. I started reading loads of Tony Robbins books and just reading about healing, I guess, healing in many ways. And I implemented what I now know is a positive psychology intervention called Three Good Things, which is a gratitude intervention. And every time I had an anxiety attack or, or I woke up in the night or any sort of anxiety, I would repeat to myself three good things that I had in my life or three good things from that day or, you know, something, three positive things, basically. Excuse me. And the intervention for positive psychology is actually to do that. I think it's a daily thing, but I would sometimes do it 10, 15 times a day, depending on how many anxiety, sort of anxious moments that I was having. And really, really slowly over time, I noticed that I started to feel better and I had more control over my anxiety. And I now know, without getting very sciencey about it all, that I was actually retraining my neural pathways.
NLP? neurolinguistic programming?
That's something slightly different. Something slightly different.
Damn, neural I got pathways. It wrong.
But very good.
I thought I knew what I was talking about.
I only just do. So, neural pathways are the actual connections that your brain makes. So kind of like the paths that your brain makes with signals. I mean, that's really rudimentary. I'm definitely not a neurologist, but I describe it to my clients actually as if you imagine a huge, great cornfield. And if you run up and down a section of the cornfield, all the corn will go flat. So in order to create a different path, you have to start treading corn in a different way. And that is what that intervention was doing. Slowly, that the corn would go down a more positive route. So instead of the well-trodden anxiety path, over time, it slowly would be rerouted to the positive thoughts that I was giving it. And therefore, your healing and your recovery starts, and you start to feel more positive and in control, which is really, really important.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, I mean, that was my first actual applied moment of positive psychology, as I know now. But at the time, I hadn't really equated it to something that I loved so much and that I was going to follow as a career at that point. So that was kind of my first interaction with it. Now I'm looking back. But since then, actually during COVID was probably the next time that I started to join the dots together, thinking, hang on, there's something in this. This is the clarity that I've been looking for with my next career path, you know. And during COVID, I wrote 100 positive gratitude social media posts that actually went around the world. And I never intended to write 100. I just found myself, as probably many of us were, hanging on to anything positive at all. Because the news was horrific, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. You couldn't go anywhere, turn around to anything without either, if you were around people, they would, you know, you'd be talking about it. Or you put on the news or you put on TV and it would come up. If you went to the shop at the times you could, it would, you know, everyone's wearing masks and you just couldn't get away with it. It psychologically does your head in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was really detrimental to people's mental health and physical health. And I think everyone felt completely out of control. And I think they also felt like they couldn't or weren't allowed to be positive. It was like, you know, I know a lot of my friends, we talked about it, and you almost felt guilty for having hope. It was like the news was trying to keep you in that depressed, miserable state because, you know, we were a bit more easy to manage when we were fearful. You know, we were more likely to stay indoors.
Yep.
We were more likely to do what we were told. I mean, fear is a very powerful thing. And so I chose to, as probably many other people did as well, switch off the news. I remember at the start, everyone was hanging on it, weren't they? And we were all watching every bulletin and listening to every radio broadcast. But it got to the point where I realised that if I was going to be at home and look after two children, and my husband was able to go back to work at this point, if I was going to be in the house with them, looking after them on my own for an indefinite amount of time, I knew that I had to really manage my mental health and for the sake of my children, essentially. So, yeah, I started to choose what I'd done before because I knew it had worked. And that was focus on the positive, focus on gratitude and focus on strengthening that connection to good things, essentially. And, yeah, it ended up being 100 posts. And I got messages from all around the world saying, God, your post has really helped me today. It's really cheered me up. And, you know, it's nothing amazing. I mean, it was like, I've had a great coffee today. Like on the bad days, it was literally, I've had a nice hot shower and a coffee that was amazing. And on the good days, it was, I had a walk down to the river with the kids and we sat in the garden. But it was incredibly mindful. It was small things, you know, it wasn't getting on a plane and going to Thailand for a fortnight. And I think that's why positive psychology is so powerful, is actually when you look at gratitude and the small things, it's about focusing on what you have. It's focusing on strengths and and being grateful for what you have rather than lack and what's going wrong. And that's what I'm all about. And actually, that's what I've always been all about throughout my life. But I just haven't had that label for it, I guess.
Oh, that's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, Summer, talk to us about a bit more about positive psychology and the work you do with some of your clients.
Okay, yes. So I've got loads of notes here because otherwise I'm in danger of going down a giant rabbit hole. So I think I mentioned a little bit before, you know, positive psychology is a focus on what's going right with individuals. And it's essentially a study of human flourishing and thriving and what's strong within people, what they're good at, and kind of building on that. Another way I describe it is if you think of a number line from 0 to zero to minus 10 and 0 to plus 10. Traditional psychology is sort of hangs out in 0 to minus 10. So it's what's going wrong. It's anxiety, it's depression, it's that lack that I was speaking about before. Where 0 to plus 10 is where positive psychology sits. So it's what's going right, it's your strengths, it's flourishing, it's wellness and well-being. So I guess my job as a positive psychology practitioner and coach is to A, let people know that it's there, and B, show them how to use that in their lives. Because apparently, I can't remember who says this now, I learned this in my master's that I did over the last 2 or 3 years, but apparently most people sit around -3 to +3 their whole life. I mean, isn't that terrible? -3 to +3. So most people never get from 3 to 10, and most people don't even know that exists, and that's a born human right to have that happiness. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think we don't know how to get to that 10? Is that where, like, for example, what you support with helps? Because I can kind of understand why people don't go from the +3 to the +10, because, you know, life goes by, and you know what I mean when I say this, you know, you work, yeah, and then family, and, you know, it's difficult sometimes to completely, you know, think about yourself sometimes because you've got so many responsibilities, and focus, yeah, on, you know, your own psychology. And I think we're all a bit guilty, you know, like, and I'm sure you know what I mean, especially when you were in your last career, you know, yeah, you just get swamped inside of it. And yeah, you kind of, and I think you mentioned at the beginning, you started to take its toll, basically, yeah, to a point where you started thinking, this is, you know, I've got the kids, this is not going to be healthy for me to continue. I kind of get it why people, they don't get to their plus 10, and maybe they need that mentor or that person or that coach or psychologist, etc., to take to that, yeah, next level. Some people do. I'm not saying, you know, there's some people that I think that do, yeah, but probably not everyone.
I think most people are so, I think they just don't think that it's available to them. Yeah, I think we get, yeah, so used to doing the drudgery and thinking that's what normal life is. I mean, my friend said to me the other day, oh, I think I'm going to apply for this job. And she said something that was completely not her. And she didn't even look happy about it. And I said, why on earth are you going to go and do that, you know, if it makes you miserable? And she said, well, you know, should I be happy at work? I was like, oh, well, yes. You know, it's a right. Happiness is a right. It shouldn't just be a one-off. It shouldn't just be a potluck. But I think it's something that you have to give time to. And I think ultimately it is the most important thing we can do for ourselves, because I'm a great believer in, especially this is what parenthood teaches you, if your cup is empty, then you are literally no good to anyone, and especially not your children. And my husband, you know, we have quite a unique relationship. That's an understatement, because he works away a lot. But, you know, I have to be really fit and healthy and well mentally and physically as best I can, because he's away a lot, and those kids come first. And I think we're taught selfishness is a good thing, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think with the distance as well, there's always going to be, it's obviously there's going to be those challenges, isn't it? Because, I mean, do you guys talk once a day maybe about what's going on, or?
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, we have a really, really close relationship. You keep free. Yeah. I mean, we text an awful lot, and we communicate a lot about everything, really. But I think we're both very conscious that we owe it to each other and our families to be as fit and well as we possibly can, because, you know, without that you kind of have nothing. And I think people need to not feel guilty about putting themselves first, because it doesn't mean that that's a bad thing, that you are, as I said before, selfish. It means that you are able to give more. And I think that's where positive psychology is, you know, it's flourishing. It's giving your human, making your human needs met. So your well-being is increased. So your mental health and your physical health is better. So you're able to live your happiest life, and then also give more back in return.
Absolutely. What topics do you cover with some of your clients?
Oh my goodness me. So in my business, Your Zen Life, I mainly do lots of one-on-one coaching, which people come to me. It's mainly women, and to be honest with you, a lot of mums, because mums are, as you can tell, an area that I am really passionate about, because quite often they are in a place with their lives, not just career-wise, but where they have children and things do completely change. Quite often it's identity things. They don't know what they want anymore. They don't know who they are anymore. They don't know how to prioritize what they're good at. You know, quite a lot of women are, you know, they come out of careers, or they arrive at a place where they just don't know what skills they have, I guess, you know. So quite a lot of women come to me for things like that, you know, for clarity, direction. I think I've said, you know, a lot. clarity and direction, and just figuring out. It's a lot of self-discovery, I think. And using that with coaching, positive psychology with coaching, is really powerful, because it's one-on-one, and coaching is all about empowering the person. I don't have the answers. It's me getting the answers out of them. So, you know, I'm a great believer, as all coaches should be, that the person, the coachee, is the one with the answers. They know what they need. It's my job to help them gain clarity around that and move forwards. Essentially, you know, to be happier, fitter, have, you know, better well-being, all of that 0 to +10 that we spoke about earlier, that most people either don't think is available to them, or, you know, they don't know how to get there.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah,
I have a lot of women that come for clarity with things like that.
But the ladies that do so, I'm just trying to, if they've come out of a career and now they're becoming a mum, do you think it's like the first time they're thinking they're out of that arena now? Because you know what I mean, Summer, when you're in that 100 mile per hour race, right? And the careers go, you know, you're traveling, or whatever it is you might be doing, and you're working really hard, and all of a sudden it stops, and then you become a mum. And then you also get time to think about you as a person. It must be shocking. It must be so shocking.
I mean, it's literally the craziest ride of your life. Honestly, nobody can prepare you for it. And I think the biggest shock for me was that whole identity crisis that I never expected to happen. And I remember standing in front of the mirror one day when my eldest son was tiny, thinking, God, I didn't even know what mums wear. What do mums wear? Should I be wearing something different now I'm a mum? it was all these crazy thoughts that you don't expect to have. I mean, I don't think I'm completely unique in that, but it makes you question every ounce of you, because you obviously go through this crazy physical experience, and overnight you are handed this tiny baby that you have no clue what to do with.
Unreal, is it?
And it's terrifying, Gavin.
I have a lot of respect for you ladies, honestly, because every time I see someone with a baby, or I think about, you know, you just kind of, you think, gosh, the ladies have to go through a lot. Because you give birth to this human being. First, you've got the 9 months build up, right? Which in itself is a whole other world from what I can see. Obviously, I don't know. But then, I know I've heard it's a wonderful experience. You have the child, but then you have the child. And I've heard it's wonderful. And then that's another part of the whole experience to go through. And then you've got to go, your routine changes, your sleep pattern might have to change. And
I mean, there is no sleep pattern. I mean, well, what?
There we go.
There is no sleep pattern.
Wherever the, yeah. You know, I've heard some ladies have had some, there are some ladies I've spoken to who have had some good experiences. And they've said that their baby does sleep overnight, which actually allows them to sleep overnight. But not everyone.
Do you know what? That's amazing for them. That never really happened for me.
Oh.
And you know, I tell a lie. With my first son, was really great. He slept pretty well most of the time. He was quite a quiet baby. And then my second son arrived. He was also amazing, but he was completely different. And all the tricks that I had done for the first one just didn't work for the second one. And he just wanted to be with me the whole time. So, I mean, it's hard. It's a hard transition because you're very torn as a woman. I think this goes for dads as well, but I mean, I'm just speaking from personal experience. I think dads, you know, have their own challenges completely. But from a woman's point of view, because I was always a career girl and a career woman, I guess, you have this pull that you never really ever could have understood beforehand, where half of you is desperate to stay at home with your baby and be there because it's a chemical thing. You know, you literally feel sort of physical pain when you're not with them, especially when they're tiny. And if you're feeding them and all that breastfeeding, whatever, it's crazy. And yet there's another part of you that, you know, for me, I was 32 when I had my first son, but all of that time you have been focused on something just for you. And it's mentally really hard. I think that's the thing. I think that's why a lot of women suffer through all of it, is because the choices seem very narrow. There's still not enough support, from employers and in society in general for mums. And I think actually I read last week that paternity, time off for dads is supposed to be being increased to at least 6 weeks. You know, things like that are really helpful to mums, because it's not all, doesn't all directly have to be about our rights. It's also about supporting the family structure, you know, because family structure is not like what it was when we were kids. When my grandparents were kids, there was, you know, extended families, and there was, you know, it takes a village, as they say, and we don't have that village in the same way anymore. So at least give dads some time off. It's a challenge. I mean, it is a challenge. And there's a lot of questions that mean your well-being can really, really suffer. And I think that's another reason why I'm so passionate about working with mums and women, especially, is because, you know, there's still a lot of suffering out there, and it's still happening quite quietly and apologetically. You know, things change and they want something new and they want something different, but they often lose a lot of confidence. And it is figuring out that self-discovery, what you're good at, where you sit in life, not just with your career, but just as a person, you know? I'm quite passionate about it. Can you tell?
No, absolutely. No, but I think it's brilliant that you are, because it is a big topic, you know, which we're going to come back onto after this quick commercial break.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Good, So Summer, thank you very much for that. You know, when you was talking about that, I started thinking about postnatal depression. And I'm sure it's a subject that comes up possibly with some of your clients, basically. I've done a few shows on postnatal depression, and fathers go through it as well. You know, it's, you get the mums and dads, they both can go through it. You get prenatal as well, and postnatal and all the rest of it. And, you know, and it's a very challenging time that people, from the discussions I've had with both mothers and fathers, it's a very challenging time, and it's a lot to get through, you know. But once you do, it's obviously it's a brilliant thing, and you get to enjoy having the children more and all the rest of it. Are there other topics that yourself cover with your clients at all?
I mean, it's literally whatever they want to work on with themselves. I mean,
relationships, jobs.
Well, people come to me with lots of different things, but relationships, I guess, aren't necessarily a specific thing that comes up. But what we find often is working in sessions together, that relationships and that kind of communication with people that we're surrounded by as humans every day often are interweaved with lots of other things and in everything we do, I guess. So not necessarily relationships specifically, but what we find is that relationships come up. You know, you can't kind of not talk about work without talking about relationships, or, you know, if you're a mum or a parent, it's all relationships with your children and spouses and partners, and all of those things are really important. But I think one of the things that I've noticed comes up quite a lot is balance, and that's work-life balance, but also within work-life balance, it's balance within your own workplace, because quite often there's still a difficult culture, especially in the UK, I think, where it's getting a bit better now. But, you know, when I used to work in television, you know, a few years ago before the kids were born, it was still the mentality of you get in early and you leave late, and that you got brownie points for that, which I think is slowly changing. But quite often, even within your workplace, there's no balance. So, and I have a lot of women that kind of come to me and talk about that, and trying to figure out how they can be happier at work. They don't necessarily always want to leave their job, but it's figuring out how they can make that job work for them in a different way. Because as I said earlier, you know, we all change, we all evolve at different points in our life. We kind of need different things to make us happy. Different things make us excited. And sometimes we just kind of find our way a bit within our job that we might have been doing for, you know, a few years. So one of the things that I love to look at in that kind of situation is something called job crafting, which is what we call in positive psychology, it's called job crafting, which is essentially kind of creating more meaning and happiness in your workplace in like a proactive way. So you sort of make the job that you've got something that you love again, you know, whether that be a new job that hasn't turned out quite as you expected, or you haven't settled in yet. So it's looking at all the things that you can do to create that happiness and meaning for yourself whilst you're at work. Because let's be honest, we're at work a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really important, isn't it, to try and, you know, get that big chunk of your life as happy as possible, because that has a knock-on effect on all those things we've just said about, you know, relationships and communication. And when you come home, if you're miserable at work, then quite often you're going to take that out on your family and your friends, and you're just, you know, your sense of happiness and well-being is just not as good as it can be. So job crafting is something that's quite new to me, because I have just started exploring it and doing research when I did my master's. But it's really something that can work, and it can be just looking at your day, for example, and figuring out what bits you actually love about your job and how much time you are spending on the bits that you love, and figuring out perhaps if there's a way that you can spend more time doing those things. So, for example, I've got a friend that absolutely loves spreadsheets. She loves spreadsheets, and she's always saying she wants to have more time doing spreadsheets. So you could be a spreadsheet lover, and perhaps it's arranging your day in a different way, so you spend more time doing that. It could be connecting with your staff, maybe. So trying to arrange your day in a way that you get to connect with your staff more and build on those relationships, and fueling all the things that make you happy, that made you want to do that job in the first place, I guess. For other people, it could be that they're ready for more responsibility. So it can be working with your employer and perhaps asking for a meeting to suggest that you're ready for a new challenge, or it's kind of consciously creating and taking responsibility for how happy you are at work. And yeah, it can really have an absolutely massive effect on your well-being and your happiness. But it's something that I love, and I think a lot of women especially that come to me are finding is very helpful, especially in that transition period when you've perhaps had children and you're not quite sure what you want to do. Perhaps your job's not 100% working for you. You're thinking about moving careers, but you're not quite ready. So whilst you're in that transition period and figuring things out, job crafting can be a way of testing the waters, I guess, and thinking, am I really unhappy, or is it just that this isn't quite working for me?
You know, it just came to me now. How can people generally... You get up in the morning. How can someone use positive psychology to start the day and go through the day? You were saying that all to me, which is brilliant. And I thought, do you know what? That would be a good question just to help our listeners and myself.
Absolutely. Well, I was thinking about this yesterday before we spoke. And I was thinking, I have things in my day that I try and do most days that I think that are quite small, easy things that people can do in their own daily lives. So I think the three good things can be really powerful. You know, this works over perhaps 2 to 3 weeks. I think they say 21 days to form a habit and create new neural pathways and things like that. But just if you're struggling and you're having anxiety, or you're just feeling low or down, think about three things that you have in your life or that have happened in that day. It's not rigid. It can be whatever whatever you like. And just notice that at the end of each day. That is very simple, but very powerful. And it's worked for me a number of times, so I know that it works. Another thing that I like to do is on my phone, I have a photograph album called Happy Album. And in that album is probably 10 or 12 photos, all of things that make me feel good. So if I'm having a moment that is, you know, low, it's been a rubbish day. And don't get me wrong, positive psychology practitioners also have bad days. It's not all about being happy.
We're all human.
We're human. And it's about learning how to manage the way that you live so you're happy most of the time and you know what to do to get yourself back on track. I think that's the thing. It's the empowerment of it rather than expecting yourself to be, you know, 10 out of 10 every day. So yeah, the three good things, the happy album on your phone is a really simple, little easy things to do. I also have a pop-up message. This is all on my phone, which is not necessarily a good thing. You can do this on post-it notes on your mirror. You can have it, you know, stuck somewhere on a notepad by your phone. But in the morning I have a pop-up that says three words. It says mindful, grateful, kind. And so it reminds me to engage in the day, the word mindful, which is I quite often sit in the bed, and I'm lucky enough to live in the middle of Devon, so I'm surrounded by trees.
You're in Devon. You're the second person I think I've interviewed in Devon.
I'm actually in Cornish, so I'm on the wrong side of the Tamar River down here, but we'll take it.
Devon's a beautiful area.
It is beautiful. I'm very lucky. So the mindful is to engage in the now and the day. Leave anything bad from yesterday or the week behind, you know, just engage in the moment. So I quite often try and listen to the birds. Grateful is just thinking, God, you know, I'm lucky. There's always something to be grateful for. And kind, I just think, right, okay, I'm going to do my best to be kind today, spread a little love, get a little love back, you know. So that's one thing. And then at the end of the day, I have something else pop up that says, what went well today? And I think just having those little reminders are really powerful. So I would definitely recommend pop-ups on the phone for the modern age. They are really, really good. And they just give you a little nudge back into optimism and hope. And yeah, what went well, not went absolutely crap, which is normally what we're thinking, isn't it? That's our natural go-to, is to think of what's gone wrong all the time. But yeah, what went well today, I think, is a really good one to get into the habit of just noticing. And the more you notice, the more those neural pathways kick in and the easier it is to be positive and happy, essentially.
Does food play a part as well? Do you talk to any of your clients about food at all? I know it's like I'm just throwing it out here now, just completely different. I'm just thinking, like, for example, alcohol is a depressant, as we know. Smoking, I believe, yeah, my understanding is, can cause stress. Do you ever talk to any of your clients about food and dieting or anything like that? Or, you know, what their lifestyle is like daily? You can say no, don't worry.
It's not my area of genius, I would say, because I'm not a nutritionist. But yeah, I mean, you know, I quite often, I have a bank of people that I work reasonably closely with now that I refer people onto. So I like to think of coaching as a helping profession. And, you know, counselling and psychiatry and things like that are healing professions. And I guess a nutritionist would be somewhere between the two, because I think if your diet is right, it can be incredibly healing. So, yeah, I mean, we talk about everything in my sessions, whatever the client wants to talk about. If it's going to help them, we go there, unless it's something that I think, you know, is a bit more clinical and I try and refer them on to a professional, yeah, healing profession, which would be a clinical psychologist or counsellor or something like that. But quite often coaching and those professions can work in tandem. So, but yeah, I think food definitely plays a part in well-being for me. I mean, I know when I've had a lot of wine at a couple of parties at the weekend, especially as, like, you get older, it takes you a lot longer to recover.
Oh, gosh. I don't drink anymore. I don't drink anymore, but...
well done, you.
I remember going from, you know, when you go from your 20s to your 30s and you start to, yeah, and you think, hold on a second, this getting over this is not the same as being in your 20s.
It takes a lot longer.
It takes a lot longer. And then you hit your mid-30s and late 30s and you're like, oh, hold on a second, this is taking even longer.
I know. Tell me about it. I know. I try not to drink very much now, unless it's been a very, very stressful day in the week. I do love a nice glass of wine. I'm not going to say I don't, because I absolutely do. And I really appreciate it, especially once you've travelled around Spain and all those amazing vineyards that they've got.
No, there's nothing wrong. I think it's a lovely thing. Balance is exactly. Portion, yeah, and balance, absolutely. Not excessive.
Everything in moderation, I like to think. And I say that to my kids. You know, I wouldn't like to say don't have chocolate, don't have cake, because I want them to learn to be able to manage their own health and well-being. I mean, that is what life's all about. It's feeling like you are free to have all the nice things. But as my mum was used to say to me, you know, a little bit of everything does you good. But if you were to live on carrots all the time, you'd be poorly. And the same as chocolate cake and wine. So
100%. Does social media ever come up? At all. I'll tell you what sense. Basically, there's a few people I've spoken to now, psychologists, etc., and a few people I've interviewed, and they say what they say to people and what they do then practice themselves is they put the phone away at a certain time at night so they don't start scrolling on social media, because that can. I know it's a whole topic in itself, but just briefly,
it is a huge topic.
I know it's a huge topic. I know, and we've only got a few minutes left. But basically,
I'll come back and talk about that.
I think that would be a really good idea. But okay. I just hear it's a good idea just to put the phone away at night. And I try doing this more and more now. You know, instead of YouTube. Don't give me this, good stuff on YouTube, but scrolling on Instagram, I've tried to stop that.
It's
all of
really
that
difficult,
now,
isn't it? Especially when I've got two boys. I can only speak for my own, but they love gaming. And that's kind of how a lot of young boys socialize, I've realized as well. They talk to their friends and they do, like, I can hear them laughing and they're kind of learning teamwork in some ways. I think it has a lot of positives, but actually on the flip side, it is one of the only things that we argue about. And I absolutely hate the boundaries around it. It's really, really difficult. As a parent, it's really difficult. I'm actually reading a really good book, which I recommend. I can't remember who it's by, but it's called Digital Minimalism. And it's about how you can have have digital things in your life without it affecting your well-being, essentially. So it's all about the balance. And when I've finished it, I'll let you know. But so far, it's really, really good. And it's suggesting basically that tech is holding us back from being our best selves, which I am totally on board with. But it's hard because I use social media for my work every day. It is a big connector, and connections are needed more than ever now. And it's an easy way to connect with people. So I don't like to just moan about it all the time, but I think being really conscious of how much we are on it, trying to put time limits on your apps. I struggle with it. I'll tell you why. And this is not an excuse, although my husband would say it is an excuse, but because he's away a lot, you know, he can be on a different time zone. So I quite like having my phone by my bed in case he texts, especially if he's sailing across the Atlantic, which is a crazy thing to do, but he does it a lot. You know, I'm always quite nervous when he's doing stuff like that. So I quite like to know that I can have the phone next to me in case he texts or, you know, all those things. But I do try and have app limits on my phone. It's definitely a big part of well-being that we need to get our heads around going into the future. And I think digital burnout is a real thing and an overwhelm. And WhatsApp has a lot to answer for. I am in so many parents' WhatsApp groups. I can't even begin to tell you. And it's overwhelming. And it is panic-inducing sometimes because you feel like you have to be available 24 hours a day. And you don't. You know, I'm always telling my clients, you know, you are allowed to switch that off. You are allowed to let that go to voicemail. You know, you are allowed to do these things. Boundaries are really important for each and every one of us. And I think it's definitely a challenge, but it's really important. So
Summer, it's been great having you on the show. It's been absolutely brilliant. Where can people find you? On social media.
Yeah, not my address. they can find me, my website is yourzen-life.com. I'm on Instagram, yourzen_life. And I think I'm on Facebook, yourzenlife or yourzenlifedevon. I'm never sure which one the handle is on there. But if you Google my name, Summer Bradshaw, yourzenlife, I will pop up probably in lots of different places.
Fantastic. Thank you so much again.
Thanks for having me, Gavin. Nice to meet you.
You too. And thank you to our listeners. You know, you can find me on Instagram at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.